another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my co-host and friend, Adam Short, host of the Grit in the Wild podcast. Adam, it's good to be back and to talk about this weird, weird thing that you sent me. I'm still laughing at this. It's unbelievable. Whenever I left the cult, we just had this conversation right before the podcast. I was working to wash all of that nonsense out of my head, and I read the Bible over and over and over. But it wasn't the first time I'd read the Bible. I read the Bible while I was in the cult. And I'm learning, even after leaving the cult, a vast majority of Christians don't read it. And I'm shocked that it's that way in Christianity. But one of the passages that really, for me, then and now, is profound. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to protect my arrest from the Jewish leaders." He's literally saying, let it happen. This world that we're in does not matter. And you know, for me, that's profound. But also, there's a statement, I think it's in the book of John. He says, "If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you with me to that place where I've created," right? Something to that effect, right? Mm-hmm. And then you sent me this video that's Arise and Build. And it is like if you took the words of Jesus, everything that he says in all of the Gospels, and flip them completely upside down and tell the people that, no, we're going to prepare the way, not Jesus. Yeah. We're going to prepare the place. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you talk, but I'm a big sci-fi fan, as like you know. I've got the Millennium Falcon behind me.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows of all time is Battlestar Galactica. And I've seen the old version, the new version, the one from the 90s. There's this concept that you've got all of these invading enemy Cylons that are on the Earth, and mm-hmm. you can't tell them from the other people because they're wanting to repopulate, rebuild the Earth, and create it as their domain. And yep. I'm watching this video from Bethel Church, and I'm thinking, man, this is the Cylons in Bethel Church, man. They want to take over.
Oh man, well, I am like completely illiterate when it comes to Galactica or, you know, all that fun stuff. But I think I get the picture of what you're saying. And it really is the inverse. And so what we're talking about, just for everybody's benefit, is this, and it's actually not a new video. It's been out a couple years. But it was released as part of the whole marketing push by Bethel Church in context with their new building project that they've been working on now for, I think, about 2 years. You can look on Google Earth in Redding, California. You can look at the progress, at least as of the satellite photo, the date the satellite photo was taken, or even look at Google Street View. And you can see they are building a very large and lavish building complex that is being pitched as really the epicenter, is what they're calling the epicenter of really the fulfillment of Bill Johnson's vision, which has been for heaven to invade Earth. But this video, John, when my wife and I came across this a while back, it's probably last year sometime, we watched, and we've been out of Bethel for a good while, like, what, 15 years or so formally, and then further extricated after that. But even watching that for us was like, it was so creepy. It was so eerie. I think the part that really grabbed our attention the most was the section is timestamped 1:14 in the video, where there's literally like this fluorescent light that they're like unearthing it. They're going to dig a hole, and we're going to dig up this light out of the earth. And I'm like, we're watching this, and like, this is, I don't know what this is, but it doesn't resemble anything in the Bible. And like, and actually, I'd like to see somebody analyze the transcript and see if there was any mention at all of Jesus. I don't think there was. I think this is gobbledygook, pie in the sky. I don't know what it is. I don't even know what to call this, John. Like, what is this? Please tell me.
First off, you need to watch the original Battlestar Galactica. The bad guys had this light that goes back and forth in their eye. I mean, when I saw the light, I was like, oh my gosh, man, this is a sci-fi show. This isn't a church video. But
right.
to the theological point of all of this, I get in trouble sometimes because I grew up in this world that was fully isolated from all of this, and we were in this isolationist doomsday cult. And I get out of this, and I get into mainstream Christianity, and in that process of leaving, I have read the Bible over and over and over again. Even after, you know, the first few churches, I'm still going through and washing this out of my head. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading the Bible for what it says, but I'm starting to realize that even in mainstream Christianity, you find the influence of all of this has shifted things to the extent that it's almost not recognizable between mainstream Christianity and what I'm reading in the Bible. I know various churches are different, but I'm seeing things that this can only have came from the Latter Rain charismatic movement, the way that they're thinking. And I get in trouble because I don't see the trivial details that divide the theologies. I've mentioned at one point in time, I was mentioning John Wimber's Dominion theology, and mm-hmm. I was calling it the Kingdom theology of John Wimber. And
like the Kingdom Now.
Well, so Kingdom Now, I got flack for this, and the funny part is I can't distinguish the two because both are extra biblical the way that it's presented. But if you say Kingdom Now, all the John Wimber fans say, no, he didn't teach Kingdom Now. And if you say John Wimber's Kingdom Theology, the Kingdom Now people say, well, John Wimber didn't go all the way there. What's really interesting is if you put the both theologies in AI, but don't mention any names, you say, are these theologies the same? And they say, well, they have the same derivative root. And it is extra biblical what they're teaching. But the issue is, both of them suggest that, you know, Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. And the other passage I was reading, I go to prepare a place for you. Jesus is preparing the place.
Yes, yes.
In these extra biblical kingdom theologies, it's not Jesus that does it. You do it. You do it here on earth. You're the Cylons. Yeah, yeah. You're invading. You're going to push all the bad guys out that, you know, if you're the Cylon point of view, you're pushing all of the things that you disagree with away because mm-hmm. you're preparing a place for Christ to come instead of Christ preparing a place for you to go.
Oh my gosh. Let me just talk about this. You talked about Kingdom Now, Kingdom. Let me just go to Manifest Sons of God for a minute and let's talk about Joel's army. Let's talk about the prophecy that it's in its, oh my gosh, is it Malachi? I think it's Malachi. Where the prophecy was that God would turn the hearts of the fathers back to the hearts of the children and the hearts of the children back to the hearts of the fathers. That prophecy has been quoted so many times in the Bethel, IHOP, and Morningstar circles that I was a part of. And then it was also affiliated with the Joel's army. And then the line was drawn to John the Baptist. Okay, I'm going to get to what you're talking about here, the prepare the way stuff that Bethel puts in this video that you hear Bill Johnson's voice. But I want to get to, how did we get to prepare the way? It is, like you said, an inversion of what actually, I think what actually was supposed to happen or was spoken about in the Bible, in that John the Baptist fulfilled many of the Old Testament prophecies because he was sent as one that came before Jesus to announce his coming, right? And it was said of John the Baptist that he was preparing the way for the Lord. Okay, so that's where prepare the way came from. But here's where they hijacked it, is they took all these prophecies from the Old Testament, like Malachi and others, and then they superimposed this Joel's army stuff on top of it, and all of a sudden, like, all of us now living in the 20th and 21st century are supposed to be like all these John the Baptists again, where we're preparing the way for the Lord. And to your point, like, yeah, it's a total inversion of the entire gospel, right? Because isn't it the gospel that Jesus actually came to us to save us from our sins? He did not, last I checked, I don't believe the Bible taught that we're to get on a hamster wheel and literally run on a hamster wheel our whole life until we can somehow usher in the kingdom of God to such a point where light comes out of the ground.
Yeah.
like what?
So let's pause a bit and do a history lesson. You know a lot of this history, but a lot of people don't. And sadly, that's the problem, because when you make mistakes, if you erase the history of your mistakes, then you're bound to recreate and continue making the same mistakes going forward. Well, we've talked a bit about British Israelism, which is the concept that the British Isles and later the United States were grafted in as the continuation of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. That was a theology that was widespread. People believed it. When it came into the United States and it merged with all of the anti-Semitic and racist themes, it birthed what became known as Christian identity. But specifically, what they were doing was they were taking passages from the Old Testament, because we are the children of Israel. Anything, all of the blessings given to Abraham and his seed for the children of Israel, that applies to us. So we can take those passages out of context and say that it had an ancient meaning and it also has a modern meaning. So basically, they're overloading language within each verse that they take out of context to say that, yes, this applied to, I don't know, Nahum and his prophecy, but also it applies to Chicago today. And that is, I've given that example. William Branham said that the old prophet Nahum was talking about Outer Drive in Chicago whenever he was talking about the chariots going to and fro. And no, that's untrue. He was talking about Nineveh. But that notion merged. And so the last chapter of Malachi, the people were, as you know, really caught up into the King James Version only.
Right.
And there are words that have different or shifting meanings today from what the old Queen's English had.
Yeah.
So great and terrible, for example. Terrible in today's language means awful. That's an awful thing. It's a great, awful thing. So when it says the great and terrible day of the Lord in Malachi, modern readers read it and thought, well, that means awful. But great and terrible back then, also the word terrible might mean something that is just awe-inspiring. It's terrible. It's sure. Unbelievable. This is a great and unbelievable thing, the coming of God. So where it says, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet, they were trying to make the notion that promise to Israel applied to the generations today, and that this Elijah figure would come. And over and over and over, it has repeated itself. Frank Sanford said that he was this Elijah figure. John Dowie said he was. William Branham said he was. Then the Latter Rain movement, you have to understand, there is the culture surrounding all of this is very militant. You've got the World War I and World War II coming on the heels of all of this. So they took the passage from Joel and combined it with Malachi to claim that this Elijah figure will restore the hearts of the father to the children of the father, by creating this end time army. That was a Latter Rain prophecy, which if you're an IHOP, you know this intimately, because they just copied and plagiarized it, right? So all of this theme was created, and as towards the end of Latter Rain, after it's starting to shift into the charismatic movement, and they will realize that William Branham's a nut job, the theme started shifting from an individual as the Elijah figure to, well, it's really the army that's the Elijah. It's the spirit of Elijah across multiple people. And that's really the background for how this theology emerged. But what they essentially created was the notion that we will, as this army, we will kick out all of the invaders who have invaded our country and changed our ways, and we're going to kick them out and establish heaven on earth, basically. Interestingly, it applied more towards, they were really focused on during the administration of Franklin D. Roosevelt, they falsely thought that the quote-unquote false Jews from the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion had already invaded the United States. And much of the theology comes from that political era. Mm-hmm. After the Roosevelt administration and all that dissolved, it kind of sat dormant for a while, and now it's rising up again. So we have another situation. I document a lot of this in the book, yeah. Weaponized Religion from Christian Identity to the NAR.
Yep, I'm reading it right now. It's taken me a while because it's so dense. But yeah, I remember you mentioning so much of the, well, like Sanford, and then how that just continued to move its way down into history moving forward. But yeah, like moving that conversation beyond like the Joel's Army and back to the Bethel video and the Bethel beliefs around literally bringing this kingdom to earth, even though it was never meant to be a physical kingdom. I mean, this is back to dominionism 101. And I think that if anything, it reminds me of the Catholic crusades, where there were actual armies that went to Jerusalem to, you know, and they wanted to, you know, have a conquest of Jerusalem and take over physical territory. And there was an army to do just that, even though I won't go so far as to say that Bethel or any of these movements are telling people to take up arms necessarily directly. I think that it sort of looks like that in an indirect way, because with dominionism, you know, you're literally taught to infiltrate each mountain of society and each sort of sector. And even though it's supposed to be a peaceful, you know, you're supposed to be a kind and peaceful person and not do, you know, not treat people unkindly, it actually results in a lot of harm for people. It results in harm in the people who are indoctrinated to do that. And it also results in harm to, for example, business owners who, what if you hire an employee? I mean, I'm a business owner. What if I hired an employee who believes in dominionism? How would that impact my business? I mean, it would probably impact my business quite substantially if they believe that eventually they're going to take over my business. Like, I mean, you know, that was like the thinking at Bethel, like, who's going to be the next president, or who's going to be the next fill in the blank, you know, top guy in Hollywood, or who's going to be whatever. And there's so much of that baked into thinking that, that the ultimate goal is that you actually sit on top of the mountain and you rule it. And so back to the whole Arise and Build project with Bethel, I think that that is a physical manifestation. Pardon the trigger word, but it's a physical manifestation of the belief system that we're going to literally raise $100 million and we're going to build a facility where God lives. And what's crazy is, like, it's almost like they're trying to recreate Old Covenant all over again with the Ark of the Covenant, where, you know, back then the Holy of Holies is where the Ark of the Covenant sat, and the literal glory of God was in that container. And nobody could approach it. The common person couldn't approach it. And only the Levites and the priests could approach it under certain circumstances, and certain, they had to wear, you know, their certain dress, and they had to perform all of these rituals and sacraments and things like that. It's like Bethel's doing that again. Like, we are going to be the epicenter of God on earth. I mean, quite literally, you got a fluorescent light tube. I go back to that again. I just like burned in my head. You got a fluorescent light tube in the dirt and you're digging it up in the video. This is what our goal is that the light of heaven is coming out of the dirt. And I would love for somebody to analyze that theologically in more depth. Like, what is this exactly? I can't quite get my head around it. Bill keeps saying in the video, can you see it? Can you see it? And my question is, my big question among others is, what is going to happen to this empire once Bill is no longer with us? Who is going to be the next monarch to run the empire? If you're going to build a $100 million building with this huge sprawling campus, like, who's going to who's going to lead that when Bill's gone? I don't think there's anybody, you know, in this line of succession who could even do a fraction of what Bill is from like a visionary slash leader standpoint. I mean, his son Eric, you know, left Reading like 3 or 4 years ago, so I don't think it'll be him. Maybe he will go back. I'm not sure. But anyway, that's just a question I have. Like, once you build all of this, once God lives in your building and you've fulfilled your vision, who's going to take that? You know, who's going to take it from there, basically, is my question. And I'm curious what you think. Like, do you think that Bethel will continue in all of its influence after Bill is gone? Or do you think it will just kind of wane, like sort of like decrease in influence and sort of eventually fizzle out? What do you think? Or will somebody create a new splinter group and 50 years from now, somebody else, your grandson's having a podcast talking about, you know, NAR 3.0.
You know, well, like I said, history repeats itself over and over again. If you don't document your history and you're covering up, concealing your history, you're going to make the same mistakes over and over. Here's the thing. The ideology itself isn't new with Bethel. It wasn't new with Latter Rain. It goes all the way back. Literally, you can go all the way back to Gnosticism. I saw I caught the quotes that you're talking about. Can you see it? Can you see it, my brother?
Yeah.
That was common for me in the Branham cult. Every Sunday, they would talk about these things that literally you can't see. Literally, you have to go out on this leap of faith that takes you far away from the Bible. And they say, can you see it, my brother? And that's how it was. It was the secret knowledge. If you go all the way back to the Gnostics, what is Gnosticism? They had gnosis. They had a secret knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that's what made them different from the other people who weren't Gnostics.
Right.
Us versus them. Us versus them.
Yeah.
So fast forward to Christian identity. We have the secret knowledge that everyone that we see today, back to Battlestar Galactica, we can't tell the difference. They're Cylons. They're the false Jews. They're the ones who aren't the descendants of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. But they look like us, they act like us, they're in Christian churches like us, but we have that secret. We know the difference. Can you see it, my brother?
Mm-hmm.
So
that's interesting.
That invaded the churches, and what happened? Originally, it was very anti-Semitic, and it turned into a lot of violence and hatred against Jews. Then after World War II ended and things just kind of settled down, it kind of went back underground and then flared its head again in the 60s. Same exact thing, different set of people. We have the secret knowledge. We're invaded by these false Jews. And who is it? It's the blacks. It's the African Americans in the United States. Then you have all the civil rights battle. And literally, if you go back through the newspapers it's hard to find the propaganda, but there exists on the internet propaganda speeches and magazines, etc. It's the same exact thing that they were doing with anti-Semitism in the 20s and 30s. Now they're doing it religion versus the blacks and the African Americans. And that's why this turned into such a mess, because how do you fight this? They're teaching hatred of blacks inside the churches, largely in the South. Well, that dies out after the 60s, civil rights kind of dies down, and now we have more equality. Well, it's rising again, but instead of pointing to a black or a Jew, it's literally divided on political parties. And they're taking the same notion that our country has been invaded. You can't tell the difference. They're going to churches just like we're going to churches, but they have a more liberal mindset. And I want to be very careful how I say that, because people will take that the wrong way. There are certain things within the ideologies of the people who the religious, these extremists are against, that the ideologies themselves are anti-biblical. However, it goes beyond the things that are anti-biblical. It's more about dividing the party lines and making sure that you program people to believe that it's us versus them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a persuade them to believe the things of the Bible. It's we need to conquer them because we're going to beat them into submission. We're going to claim dominion over them. And I'm very, very glad you brought up the business aspect, because I've never talked about this, but it is a huge problem because of the mindset. I've had my business for years. Mm-hmm. When I was in the cult, I had the same mindset. I believed that every single person I was working with, even though they're going to a Christian church, they were not us. It was us versus them.
Okay.
But after I left the cult and I started to deprogram, now when I go into a place and I see people who are in the cult who are in positions of management, the first thought that comes into my head, do you know that those people think that they're going to eventually rule over everyone in this building? And watch their management styles, watch how they act as an elitist, watch how they act. You know, I sit there and I think, should I warn them? Should I warn the company that this is a problem, or should I just let them notice? And interestingly, I have seen the companies begin to take notice. A good leader doesn't act like this, but they are teaching you from your inner personality to act like an elitist.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you brought that up, because it kind of takes me back to my Bethel days. When, you know, many of us were fortunate to find professional jobs, I being one of them, although it was difficult to find jobs back in Reading at the time, because it was during the famous financial crisis that happened around the 2008-2009 timeframe, which had widely reaching impacts. But There was absolutely that same kind of vibe / mentality that we were sort of taught at Bethel, which it was a very elitist. But here's and I'm not sure if this applies in your situation, like with the Branham organization, but at Bethel it's almost like it was very subtle. It was subtle. It was out front, but it was still subtle in the sense that, like, deep down, you know that, okay, God has opened the door for me to work at this business, and I'm obviously gonna come here and do my best work I can, but there's always going to be this sort of carrot on the end of the stick that this is a stepping stone to lead to greater influence, greater authority, greater, you know, fill in the blank, I don't know, fame, greater whatever. And but it's like this subconscious belief system that was in there. And as I look back on my previous version of myself, I'm like disgusted that that's how I thought. Like, because now I think it, like, the way I think now is like completely opposite. Matter of fact, I've said this before, I feel oftentimes way more comfortable interfacing and doing business with people who aren't even Christians than Christians, much less people who, you know, who are in these hyper charismatic circles. So, because there's just so much noise to filter through, there's so many curtains you have to pull back to actually get to who is this person that you're interacting with right now. Am I dealing with just and they may not even be aware of the kind of mindset they're in. But like, it's hard to know who are you dealing with, who's the actual real person behind the curtain, because the indoctrination really is so deep.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. There's another passage in John 18 where Jesus said, "I have spoke openly to the world." This is the polar opposite of what Gnosticism is. You have Jesus who's speaking openly. He said, "I've always taught openly. Why do you question me?" You know the passage. Well, Gnosticism, they try to teach you that God keeps things hidden to a very secret group.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why this exists, when during the time whenever Christianity was spreading, there were all of these mystery cults. They had some divine mystery, whether it be of the gods of the Greek or Roman pantheons, etc. And they had this secret that nobody else knew, and it made them better than the rest of the people. As Christianity is spreading, people who are of that mindset thought, well, I can apply this to Christianity and I can create my new sect. And they did that. So
syncretistically, I guess.
Yeah, it's really weird when you step back and you see how this thing spread and why. But anyway, it's called a mystery cult because they have a divine mystery.
Okay.
And one of the premises of Latter Rain was that there were these divine mysteries that God is revealing to us in the last day. And that came directly from the same mindset that I'm talking about, where British Israelism, Christian identity are taking these things that are said in the Old Testament, and they're quote-unquote twofold, to apply to the children of Israel of ancients and also to apply to the children of Israel of present. So they have the secret knowledge, and the statement, can you see it? The problem with this is all of the mystery cults, old, new, Bethel, IHOP, whatever mystery cult you're in, they never tell you what the exact mystery is because they themselves don't have all the answers. No human has all the answers. So if you're saying these things, you know, one of the phrases, what did he say? It was like, with his blueprint in our heart, it's like from that video, he said something about the blueprint.
Yeah.
Can you see it? Can you see the blueprint? Well, it's like we have the secret knowledge. We have this blueprint, but where's the blueprint? Yeah. Who has the blueprints, right? So what happens is each individual, because they have this mentality where they must know the secret to be part of the elite group, and the leader's telling them that they already have it, well, this invokes cognitive dissonance. I'm told that I have the blueprint. I don't know what the blueprint is. So therefore, both of those things are true. That's how the mind works through cognitive dissonance. And inwardly, people create in their minds what they think this blueprint is. And that's one of the huge problems, because you get one of these people working in your place of employment and you don't know what's in their head. They could think this blueprint means, well, I need to force my authority over all of the people. It also could be benign, like it could be, well, the blueprint is just to be kind to others, which is a good thing. You don't know what, since they're not explicitly saying what is this blueprint, you don't know what it is, and this, quite honestly, it's dangerous. This type of theology is dangerous.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, it reminds me of another, I think, source where this whole Gnostic mystery cult junk comes from, which is it's an exploitation and a hijacking of Proverbs 25:2. And this is a proverb that's quoted a lot at Bethel, and it is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings to search it out, or search out the matter. And so that, I remember that verse being quoted a lot at Bethel to kind of support the line of thinking, the belief system that, you know what, God actually has hidden mysteries for us to discover, which is true, but to put a spin on it and hijack it to say, like, there is this mystery that we've got to go. It, again, the onus is on us. It's always back to the people. We've got to pull the goods down. We've got to manifest these supernatural goods, these supernatural things from heaven. It's that burden is on us. Like Bill says, we owe the world an encounter with God. I mean, in what Bible is that written? We owe the world an encounter with God. Like, does God encounter people? Yes, I've had encounters with God, and I have no doubt that was legitimate, and I know a lot of people who have. But no man came to me with that encounter. Like, there was not a broker or priest or intermediary that like dispensed that encounter with God that I had, or other people that had legitimate encounters. By and large, they were supernatural, divine, sovereign experiences that happened regardless of the action of a person. You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying? And so I just think that that is another kind of example where a real verse in the Bible has been hijacked. And it's like this Gnostic spin has been put on it. But again, you're left with like this dangling carrot, because at what point do you actually know that you've searched out the matter and found the mystery? I don't think that you ever will arrive. There's always going to be more. There's always a deeper level. There's always a higher level. There's always a greater mantle. There's a greater revelation. And at the end of the day, if you spend your life in this, you are going to wear yourself out on the hamster wheel, because by the time you get to the end of your life, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I've discovered this mystery. What mystery? But the sad thing is in Christ, all these mysteries are revealed. And that is the gospel, that he actually revealed God to us by coming to us, not by us trying to pull him down. Back to your original point of like how this has sort of been inverted.
When I was reading the Bible over and over, I would take, as I was doing it, I would do different things to augment or enhance my ability to understand it. And often I would, as I'm going through some of the New Testament, I would read about the ancient cultures that are being talked about in the New Testament. Paul, for instance, he's going through all of the Greek and, you know, Roman gods, and there's a passage that is really interesting to me. He goes to the temple of the unknown God. And fascinates me. I want to know more about this. But because he's going to, literally going to the places where these mystery cults exist,
yeah.
Paul frequently talks about the mystery, the hidden mystery.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Latter-rain did, and it did it well, unfortunately, was it taught people the ability to take one single passage and use it as a context, ignoring the rest of it, and focus on powerful passages like this mystery concept. Mm-hmm. So they would read the passage by Paul, whatever it is. There are several books that talk about this. And then they would say, see, he's talking about the mystery. Mm-hmm. We have it. Can you see it, my brother? Mm-hmm. Can you see it? That's how it was. But
yeah.
If you continue reading, like for Colossians, I think it is, Paul said, the mystery that's been hidden through the ages, it's yes. now before us, we
being
see
revealed.
It.
Yeah.
It's Christ in you. It's always the light is Christ. It's not that we bring the light. It's not that we're doing anything. It's that
for sure.
It came, that was the mystery. And that scene that you're talking about in the video where the light's there, it's this mysterious thing, and then it's talking about we need to bring the kingdom down. What that is doing, it's flipping upside down. Mm-hmm. There are passages that talk about Jesus being the light, but it's not a physical light like this thing in the ground.
In the dirt, no less.
In the dirt, no less. But when it uses it, it is using it as a metaphor, saying that Jesus was the light that exposed all of the darkness. You can read passage after passage talking about Jesus as the light. It's more about there are many evil things going on in the world that people are just completely unaware at that period of time. Jesus came and he shed light on the evil in the world, and now things begin to change. And historically, if you go back, you can see they had human sacrifice and child sacrifice, all these things.
Right.
Jesus, Christianity comes, and this starts to dissipate over the coming centuries. So Jesus came, Jesus was this light, and then his light exposed the darkness. It wasn't that his light oppressed the darkness or controlled or governed or showed dominance over the darkness. Mm. It was mm-hmm. more of a, I'm shedding light on these things. That's what the passage means.
Okay.
But the way that they have flipped this up, it's like this light is the secret thing. Mm-hmm. And can you see it? Can you
That's
see the
interesting.
Light? So they get the
That's
light in themselves. And then they, as Joel's army, they start to invade with this thing that they're calling the light or, you know, whatever it is. So it's less about Jesus and more about the entity that is not Jesus and is not the Bible.
Oh, this is interesting, John. So, you know what it makes me think of is, and you've probably looked at this, the word of faith concept, the teaching of faith in faith. Have you heard that concept? It was propagated by the likes of Oral Roberts and Kenneth Copeland and Kenneth Hagin, people like that. And I wouldn't claim to be an expert on that, you know, movement or anything, but you know, it's sort of adjacent to NAR. But like this concept of faith and faith, where it's almost like the faith is the object. It's like faith is the goal here. We're looking to increase our faith as much as possible. And actually, they would teach that you can have faith in faith. And so when I go to this video, I've got it over here on this other monitor. I'm looking at these two people, and there's the fluorescent light tube in the ground. Back to your point about the light wasn't the actual object of the whole story to begin with. If you think about it, like when you turn on the light, darkness just dispels automatically. It's not like we're going to say, oh, wow, look, look at how beautiful that light is. It's just like, no, what does the light reveal? The light reveals everything in the room that was originally dark when the light was off, right? And so I think that is such a great sort of contrast to the biblical gospel, which is, yes, Jesus is the light. He's the light. He said, I'm the light of the world. But the object wasn't like, hey, look at the light. It was like, I don't know, this isn't coming out quite coherently. It's like the focus, he puts the focus back on what the true focus should be rather than these sort of ancillary flashy things that we've been captured by in these movements, you know. That was kind of a convoluted way of saying I agree with you.
Well, and you didn't realize that you did this, but you also just affirmed something that I said in the beginning when I was talking about how the language of the King James it's morphed from what it is today. The language has morphed over time, and some things have different meanings.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about with Oral Roberts and the Word of Faith movement, etc., there was this teaching that originated with Branham. He had mm-hmm. these series of sermons that were called Faith, and Faith is the Substance.
Okay.
And he would focus on the word substance.
Okay.
Because in the King James Version, it used the word substance in, uh-huh. what was the passage? It's from Hebrews.
It's Hebrews 11.
Yeah, faith is the substance of things hoped for. Like, I've got this memorized because we heard it over and over. And then it was, can you see, my brother? Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Well, that word substance, if you take the Greek word for its original meaning, that substance word, the Greek words are more complex, but it means things like confidence or assurance. It's more like it. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing justifies your faith. You see the evidence that has been made manifest because you believe these things are coming to reality. But because of the word substance, Branham took that notion and ran with it, that faith was an actual substance. And he would do things like, early in the ministry in the Latter Rain movement, not many people know this, but he would gather crowds around and he would do things like hang a bracelet from the rafters and say, look, faith is the substance. I can make this bracelet move right before your very eyes.
But it was hanging from the ceiling.
It was hanging from a string, and there are different tricks. I've watched how the magicians do it. It's a magician's trick.
Okay.
Remember, he's not, back in the old ways of preaching, there were no audio systems. You screamed like a madman. Well, the force of your breath will make the bracelet move.
Oh,
they're
interesting.
They're different techniques, right? Mm-hmm. So he's doing these stage tricks, and at the same time he's telling allegories that I assure you are not real. But he talks about how he goes into this pasture and there's this mad bull in it, and the bull starts charging him, and he started thinking about faith is the substance and how a divine perfect love merged with faith. And he spoke to the bull and said, I love you. And the bull just fell to his feet and worshiped him. And what's funny is it's actually a story from the Buddha, but
oh my gosh, okay.
That's another story for a different day.
Well, but, I like how he between squirrels and bulls, man, he's got it covered.
And I'm telling that not to make myself look like a fool, because I believe these foolish things, but picture a world of 1,000 evangelists that are in this movement that are listening to this guy tell these silly stories that you and I can laugh about today. This sounds like nonsense. Well, picture audiences of 100,000 people. I mean, he's going to large, large crowds in the heat of this, and he's telling the same nonsense, but back then they're believing all of this nonsense.
100,000 people is a huge, I mean, that is a massive number of people in one setting.
I should give that a caveat. That's his exaggeration of the numbers. I don't know the actual He would say things like this, but we have proven he over-exaggerated many of the numbers.
But like back to the bracelet thing. And it reminds me, I don't know if you and I have talked about this. We probably have. I've talked to others about it, but the whole priming concept, priming your faith concept. And I believe it was Mike Winger I talked to about this, where, and he, you know, and he came across a story where one of the, and I won't mention her name, but one of the NAR, you know, leaders is very well known, was caught putting gold dust in her Bible prior to speaking at some church or conference or whatever, and somebody discovered, hey, you put gold dust glitter in your Bible, and then you're going to go up there and preach, and, you know, oh my gosh, my Bible has gold dust. And, you know, interestingly, her rebuttal to that, as I recall, was, well, this is, you know, so what if it's gold dust or glitter that I put in there? If it primes the audience's faith to expect and believe God to do something, then what's the problem? And so I think, you know, it reminds me back to the bracelet on the string on the fishing line thing. If I preach loud enough and I spit at it, it's going to probably move a little bit and people are going to have some more faith. But isn't the destination of that just like nothing? Like, because you're not, you don't actually, is the faith in God, I mean, do you have faith in God when you do that? Or is it just, I'm like superstitious, kind of like back to the lottery God concept. Like I can pull this slot. I'm going to pull this slot. And it's going to give me what I asked for. Because there's this magic formula, A plus B equals C every time. So I just need to stay in my lane, A plus B equals C, and live happily ever after. And I can have all the money I want and, you know, have a perfect life.
Yeah, it's interesting because as I'm studying Gnosticism, it's actually a really fascinating study. You can go back and you can read the Irenaeus Against Heresies really talks through all of the different versions of Gnostics that he encountered and was aware of. And it's a really difficult read if you read that book because he's saying things that you just won't understand. So as I'm reading a chapter of his, I'd have to go to different sources online and find out, okay, what are these words that he's saying? I have no idea what this is. So it took a long time to get through it, but there's this Gnostic idea that essentially, and he used a completely different word for this. I don't remember what it was, but the meaning of it was lies for the sake of a holy end. So Gnosticism is Christianity merged with these mystery cults. So we have the secret knowledge, and because of the secret knowledge, we can tell people lies as long as it furthers their faith. That was the concept, which is fully anti-biblical. The Bible says, it clearly says, where people go who are telling lies. Well, that faith and faith concept, that also was part of the early years of the revival when Branham was the foremost leader of the revival. He is saying things like, I had an angel who came and visited me in the room, and that angel told me, if you get the people to believe in you, William Branham, not God, get the people to believe in you, then their faith will be heightened enough that they will save themselves.
I remember that story.
Right. And then added to this, whenever he would have these healing lines, he would say, do you believe me as God's prophet? It's not, do you believe in God? Do you believe Jesus came and died for your sins and died on the cross? It's, do you believe me as God's prophet? Well, this theme continued and developed unto the point where, I can't remember what year it was, but there are examples of this. He says things like, I'll take any child that has crooked eyes, bring them up to the platform, and without even praying for them, I'll make their eyes come straight.
Okay.
So it's taking God completely out of the equation. I'm not even praying at this point.
Right.
It's the power within me.
Yeah.
And that was the concept that developed because of this Joel's Army Manifest Sons of God stuff.
Okay.
You get God in the people, they become the God. And
yeah.
then they can do, if you can get the people to believe in the God, which is the preacher on the platform,
mm-hmm.
they're basically, they are fulfilling every passage that applies to Jesus, but it applies instead to the minister on the platform.
Okay, so much there. First of all, that pretty much describes what we were taught at BSSM, Bethel School Supernatural Ministry. We were taught you don't actually need to pray for a healing. You release it, right? You're releasing healing because you are the dispenser of the goods. They didn't use the word goods. That's my, you know, after hindsight interpretation. You're the ones releasing the goods onto the people. And now I look back, I'm like, how arrogant of us to think that we are some, you know, spiritually elite group of people that we can just go around releasing cancer healing. I mean, does God do that? Yeah, I think he does. I think he works through messed up people who have lots of problems, because we all do. Let's face it, we're all just messed up people. And we all have problems, and he still chooses to work through us. But are we going around, like you're saying, like this Joel's Army, we're going around and releasing quote unquote heaven to earth. And this reminds me of a thread on Twitter from yesterday where several of us were talking about this video clip from Lou Engle, where, you know, and he's rocking back and forth with his microphone. He's talking about the generation that God's raising up to contain his glory. It's the same old stuff we've heard, you know, and I frankly just can't listen to it. It wears me out to listen to people scream on microphones about a generation being raised up. That's like just a trigger I can't even deal with. But the conversation under that video clip was, there were comments in there about this is Manifest Sons of God teaching here. And here's the ironic part, John, back to your point about the platform and the preachers on the stage. Isn't it so ironic that what we were taught, at least in the NAR movements, was God is raising up a nameless, faceless generation, right? Like Joel's Army. Nameless, faceless was a very, very loaded phrase that was used all of the time. And here we are, those of us that were in our 20s back then, now we're in our 30s and 40s. We have kids, we have a family, we have a career, and we're like looking back on how we got, like, we were hijacked by this belief system, this teaching. Like, you're going to be a nameless, faceless generation. Here's the ironic part. Why is it that the guy with the microphone in front of the camera, his name is known by everybody in the world, but the people that are the little peon people who are actually doing all the work, supposedly like these fiery whoop-de-doo Avenger supernatural action figures going around supposed to heal stuff. Like, why is it that we're nameless and faceless, by the way? Like, isn't that the most ironic thing ever? Like, if somebody made that point. And so I said, you know, this is what I said, John, on Twitter yesterday. I said, you know, so that's a lot of pressure for any person to carry. And isn't it so weird? Like, who wants to follow a God who doesn't have a face and a name? And we're all just walking around with no face and name. We're just little gods walking around with no face and name. Like, that is the most ridiculous thing ever. But that's actually what, if you follow that line of thinking out to the end, that's what they're teaching.
We've mentioned it before, and it's another podcast for another day, but this thing was started by the Kardashian family. You can trace its roots all the way up to the Kardashian patriarch. Full Gospel Businessmen's Association Fellowship was highly influential in the charismatic movement and still today in the NAR. And the founder was the nephew of the Kardashian patriarch. The co-founder lived about 15 miles from my house and was a Branhamite. So you had a Branhamite and a Kardashian that joined.
Are you talking about the actual, like, Kardashian, the famous
the actual Kardashian okay. family? Yes, that uh-huh. that is the family. Like I said, this is probably our next podcast. Okay. They sponsored an Iranian faith healer who came and showed them that they can bring throngs of people together, so uh-huh. much so that the town cannot hold all the people, and they're having to wheel in hot dog stands to feed all of the people. And it's a long crazy story, but the Kardashian family saw this. Well, they created the ministry in the style of the entertainment industry of the era. And I don't know if you've ever been on stage.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on stage, you've got these lights shining on your face. What's mm-hmm. interesting about what you just said is when you're on stage and you're looking at the audience, they are nameless and faceless, because that light's in your eyes. You can't see them.
Can't even see them.
But they, every single one knows who you are, because you are you're the entertainer. You're up on stage. You know how this works.
Yeah.
And it's funny that he says things like that, because I've been on stage and that's one of the first thoughts that comes into your mind. Hey, I'm seeing a bunch of people with no faces. I mean, literally, that's what goes through your head.
So, it's true, though. I've been on the Bethel stage several times with the microphone in my hand. And, you know, I didn't preach at Bethel, but got to share a few things here and there back then. And yeah, you're exactly right. At Bethel, you can't really see the people sitting in the chairs because you got all these big old lights on you. So that's true. That's an interesting observation. Maybe that's where they actually got it from, was like, you know, we can't see y'all, so we're just gonna call y'all nameless and faceless. Oh, by the way, you can raise the dead too while you're at it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because these thoughts pop into my head. It's not like I analyze and come up with this, but I have been in places where I know things that the other leadership knew, and I've watched the thing, watched the way these things form, the way even prophecies, the way it forms is literally somebody saying what has hit their brain without actually processing it. Yes. Nameless and faceless. I said that too when I was on stage. That's the way this works. But maybe for another podcast down the road, we can just talk about how people will come up with these things, and it's literally because of the feelings and emotions that they had as a speaker, and it creates an entire doctrine because they've had this sudden thought come in their head, and people think, yeah, wow, that came from God. But yeah, no, it's because they're in this environment, they're in this hype. But anyway, mm-hmm. I could literally talk for an hour on this and another hour on this, and we've gone an hour, so maybe we'll wrap it up by saying, I saw the video you sent me, it was crazy, and it wasn't really the gospel. So what is this mess?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, always a pleasure, John. Great to talk through it. I feel like we kind of, or at least I bounced around all over the place, but people, y'all should go watch this. Y'all should go watch that video. Just like form your own opinion about it. It's 2 minutes. It's a 2 minute video, but it's packed with lots of stuff. So
if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org and the Grit in the Wild podcast. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.